Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour with your host, Jenny Seek.
Hi, folks. This is Jenny Seek, and this is your weekly forum for connecting with your intuitive process, all things metaphysical, and honoring and recognizing your soul self. Thanks for tuning in, and enjoy the ride.
Hi there, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to Inner Voice Intuitive Hour this evening. This is a forum for folks who are interested in intersection between depth psychology, that is, understanding our deep unconscious impulses, which actually, when we understand them, we can help bring them into the light of day, and they shape our lives in ways that honor our calling and honor what we're really here to do. That intersection and the intersection of connecting with our inner voice, our deep inner wisdom, our deep inner guidance. So if those topics are of interest to you, then I am really, really glad that you're here this evening. I am working on getting our guest online here in just one second. Tonight I have Mandy, Mystic Mandy, on, and she is an EFT practitioner, and she also does, she's just written a book called I Am the Lotus, Not the Muddy Pond. So as soon as we get her on, we're going to talk to her about that work, and I'm really, really excited to talk to her about the work she's doing with that. Let me see where she is at, because she's calling in via Skype, and that's a little different for me. I'm just in the process right now of figuring out what Skype is all about and how it works. So I think we should be able to get her on in a minute here. Let's see. So let's see where she might be. Oh, hopefully we can get her on here and it won't be an issue. I've never had anyone call in. Well, I have had people call in via Skype, but just trying to figure out where she's at and how to reach her with that cross number. I'm in the host queue. Okay. So it looks like she's got a different number than she's given me. I'm going to just investigate a little bit and see where she is. Hi, is this Mystic Mandy? Hello? 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 Hello?
Hear me?
Hello?
I'm here.
Yeah. Awesome. Hi, Mandy. How are you doing this evening?
Can you hear me now?
I sure can. I sure
okay.
can. Yeah. Awesome. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good.
Good. Awesome. Well, I just want to tell listeners a little bit about you. We had you on the show, I think it was last year in the fall, or maybe it was a little further back. But I know that you do EFT work, and you've made a very, very cool deck to work with EFT. So I wanted to make sure that you got to talk a little bit about that, and then also about your new book. But the first question I wanted to ask you, and I always ask everyone on Inner Voice this question, is that this is a little bit off the beaten path for kind of the way our culture creates what our role is and what it is we're supposed to do with our lives. So when you started listening to your inner voice, Mandy, was it something that you felt called to do? Did you follow it, or did it kind of pester and was persistent with you? How did that journey unfold for you?
Yeah, like, well, if you're talking about the book, the messages in the book, they come for a long time, but I couldn't listen to them because I was drowned in the collective consciousness. I didn't really understand what they were saying. It seemed to be about materialism, and, you know, we're taught to promote and to sell and to put ourselves out there into the world and to succeed. And something kept telling me false light, false light, false light. And I was like, what the heck are you talking about? You know, words like a lot, and I use cards, so I was getting all these weird cards, and I tried to just ignore it for a long time, and then it wasn't until I went on a friend's radio show in 2011 January for a reading on you know, each, there's a bunch of us psychics who are asked to read the year 2011, and I had never tried to do that before. And what came out of the reading just clicked everything in. It was largely, you know, about man's materialism and how man's materialism is creating a certain path, and how we're stuck and we're not moving, we're not changing. I mean, we're changing in thought level and whatever, but we're not matching it with action. And and there's this push on the other side for us to really let go of the materialism. The next phase is to let go of the materialism and the yang energy, as my guides call it. We've brought our yin and our yang out of balance. We think to manifest and to have abundance, we have to overdo and overachieve and overstrive. There's this message, we're not good enough. And we're manifesting that onto the landscape, and it's bearing fruits of exhaustion, depletion, you know, chaotic energies. It's spinning out of control. We're spinning out of control. And I would start having dreams where angels were coming to me in dreams and showing me tornadoes and stuff. And I was like, why are we getting tornadoes? The world has become too yang, too focused on conquest and producing. So all of this, the book isn't necessarily about that, but it came to the point I kept hearing this word collective consciousness. And I had been trying to master A Course in Miracles. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Sure.
But I couldn't, you know, I didn't really click that we're going against it, and we're splitting ourselves. So we're we're following two philosophies at the same time. We're following the pond and we're following spirit, and it's taking us into two separate directions, and this is creating a schism. And that's what the book is about. It's about how we've been conditioned to take on certain beliefs by the collective consciousness, things you wouldn't even consider until your mind starts to open. The concepts of success, concepts of duality, concepts of failure, you know, we dualize everything. And then on the other end, we're preaching concepts of love and light and non-duality and all these other things. So the book kind of came, it's part channeled, but, you know, it kind of came through this desire to merge the split. And in merging the split, we'll actually heal the planet, and we'll heal one another, and we'll bring more peace into the world.
That's wonderful. I love the fact that you bring up the bigger issues. I think sometimes metaphysical people try to stay in this kind of soft, harmonious place and miss the opportunity to connect with deeper truth, sometimes in themselves, because they keep everything on the surface and want to kind of please everyone. And there's this place in us where we have to honor what the truth looks like. And I think that it's just so wonderful that you're willing to tackle some of those bigger questions that I think lead to a sense of greater wholeness in us when we do tackle them, even though they may be scary or intimidating, and we may not sometimes have a lot of support for that journey. But that creating that pathway and making that be part of what the journey is about is such an important, way to go.
Yeah, and I was part of that movement. You know, like I said, Course in Miracles, let's be light and love. But then there was another part that was nagging me, am I really love if I'm harming the planet and going along with everything? You know, so it's kind of the biggest message was, again, it's like watch the denial. And then, you know, because are we being loving? Are we being light? Are we being all these things? And it was like it was a coin for me, and it flipped, and I got to see the other side. And it was just amazing. Like I literally felt like my mind was going to crack open. But yeah, you're exactly right. I had an angel, and I couldn't understand why all these people are channeling these angels that, like you said, are saying all this stuff, when the angel Ariel was the main one I was working with, was telling me, you know, kind of look at everything, challenge what you buy, what you sell, what you eat, you know, everything you do affects something else. Everything we think is manifesting something else. And we kind of have two programs going where we're trying to manifest all this stuff, and we're into attachment and whatever. And at the same time, we're that, like you said, that passive thing. So we end up creating destruction, not able to take responsibility or to mend it or to even see it because we're not allowed to look at it because it's negative. But yeah, from Ariel, she says, look at the negative. It's not being judgmental to see. You know, the biggest thing they said is view life as a dream. If you're starting to dream a bit of a nightmare, become lucid within it. And when you're lucid in a dream, you don't tell yourself you're not dreaming certain things. You decode it. You say, okay, why am I dreaming that? You know, why is that avalanche going to fall on my head? You know, maybe I should get out of the way. You know, but what we're doing right now is we're going, oh, there's an avalanche and it's starting to fall. Oh, well, let's just deny that and think positive thoughts and we'll pretend it doesn't exist.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the school of the schools that I kind of grew up in, the whole idea of you're talking about it in terms of the idea of there being a split inside of us. And in Jungian language, it's called holding the tension of the opposites, you know, realizing that there is some truth in both of those places. And it's about realizing that there's a tension there and that if we're able to hold that tension in ourselves, then we can heal that split. And I think that's the same kind of an idea that you're talking about.
Yeah, and I talk about my book, Buddha's Path, The Middle Way. So, and again, the yin and the yang. You want to bring the yin into balance with the yang. So, but we're way over yang. Like, we're like, you know, we're like over, that's why we're suffering exhaustion, depression, burnout. We're just like, and we've got all these overactive chakras, and that was another message is, you know, half of our ascension symptoms are actually a sign of imbalance, and we're being given them so that we could bring ourselves back into balance rather than to just ignore them and go, oh, yay, I had an ascension symptom. We go hop in our car after almost fainting or something and go drive somewhere, you know?
And I think we get so into this idea of focusing, like you said, on our symptomology, focusing on how we're feeling right now, that we miss the big piece, which is that a symptom is always an opportunity to look within for an imbalance. It's an opportunity to look and to say, you know, what is out of balance? What doesn't feel right to me? How could I tune my energies differently? How could I be more aware of another piece, especially with the dream stuff? Absolutely. That stuff about going into the nightmare. And most of us have a tendency to just whitewash the whole dream realm because we see it as, you know, as possibly negative or possibly scary or possibly the unknown. But you're right. It's an opportunity to go in with lucidity, go in with awareness and shift things and notice why we're bringing about what we're bringing about so that we can, you know, shift things and integrate things and actually change ourselves. And I think that that's what you're suggesting in our waking lives as well.
Yeah, and then the message was, because there's a lot of people who are like, you have to focus on yourself and you'll change the outside. And yes, this is true, but when we just focus on ourselves, we can't see, because we're so conditioned to believe certain things, you can't see it until you look at the world. So what Ariel was telling me is you have to look at the world and its symbols to see what's out of balance in the collective consciousness, and then you can bring it home and apply it to the self. Because, you know, we're all exhausting ourselves and doing this and doing that. We can't see that it's not normal. And then if you look at the world and what it's creating, because, you know, the Bible talks about the fruits and everything, and I mentioned the Bible in my book, but, it, you know, it's just like little things here and there. But I also mentioned Buddha and other things. But, you know, it's all true. We have it's a dual process. We can't. It's like splitting. There's a disease that's called psychological splitting, and where you go into all rights, all wrongs, all blacks, all whites, and we've kind of gone, we've split ourselves, and we've become, oh, we have to be all light and love and whatever, and like you said, we can't see the negative, but we also need to learn to see the whole and to serve the whole, and we talk about oneness, but we won't learn oneness until we actually can see the whole and examine it and get away from all of our self-absorbed focus and into the thinking about the collective, thinking how the collective affects us, how we affect the collective, and how it really is all one. We're not just one spiritually. We're one here, too. We're all in this together. So when we do that, we're going to be able to access more oneness consciousness, more love, because we're not loving right now if we're looking at our neighbor and we're partaking in the destruction of the world, and it can hurt our neighbor, hurt our kids, hurt the animals, hurt life and everything else. So we're being asked to take the next step into love, and it's not like a force your brain to do this. This trick is, it really is the word enlightenment and the word revelation. Mm-hmm. It's just about letting it bubble up so that the changes can come naturally on their own, and you can find that middle balance.
That's awesome. I think, too, that when you're talking about this idea that the systems that we've created are kind of insular, and so we're not really getting at the truth of anything. We're projecting either one particular way of looking at things onto and labeling another group of people or vice versa, and we know that the media is not helping us to be able to articulate what's actually happening or what the truth is. What we can observably see is, and I think that that's so right on, that idea that, you know, that we have to get out of this pointing the finger in another direction, or just saying that looking at it, observing what's happening, is of itself somehow, I don't know, a fallen way of responding or a non-ascended way of responding.
Yeah.
I think it's a very, it's required in the ascension process. It's to say this really is hurting people. This way of living isn't sustainable, and that hurts my spirit, you know, and that is a message that we have to be able to. And I've struggled with people on my Facebook page a little about this who have, like, said to say anything about, you know, calling out any kind of accountability is pointing the finger and playing the blame game. And I always say, no, that's not the case at all.
No, there's actually
clearly
more blame.
Something. Exactly.
If you can't observe, you blame more, because here's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You look at Monsanto, and instead of seeing how you're contributing your energy by buying products and going after a system which pursues consumerism and all these other things, you're going to wait for someone outside to fix it all. And that's
right.
The same as blame. You're going to say it's the government's fault. You're going to say it's this fault. You're going to say it's that fault. Instead of seeing the problem and then saying, how am I contributing to it? But you have to see it first. I mean, and it's, again, it's like viewing a dream. And it's not right or wrong or good or bad or anything else. It's just you're seeing the symbols of where we're creating a nightmare and where we're creating truth. And, like, you can't do that if you're just taking everything. And it's so subversive. When I was writing this book, you know, there's so many ways where we really are entrenched into believing certain things about drugs, about medicine, about healing, about work, about money. You know, the biggest thing is, like, you know, people think if they focus on the environment and all the bad things, it's going to happen. Here's what's happening. Here's what was shown me is what's going on in the environment. It's a reflection of our worship of anti-life energy. So what's going on is, because we're denying everything and we're focused in our own world and we're manifesting all these lifeless objects and calling that abundance and pursuing it and pursuing all this lifeless energy, and we're killing life in order to focus on this lifeless energy, and then what has life in it isn't even classified as abundance anymore. It isn't even seen as worthy of protecting, worthy of looking at, worthy of anything else. So by shunning the negative aspects, you cannot honor the positive. You know what I mean? You can't look at life and say, wow, you know, I really want to see how incredible and moving and beautiful spirit is working through all that. All you can see is spirit. If I focus on this thought, I'm going to manifest an inanimate object. And that is why the environment is coming to harm. It's not coming to harm because people are thinking thoughts that it's coming to harm.
Right.
It's coming to harm because people aren't thinking thoughts of life. They aren't worshiping life. They aren't honoring life. They aren't revering life. When you don't revere life, what happens? It dies.
Right. Well, I think that also has to do with our definition of perfection. You know, we live in this bigger, better, faster, more culture that kind of suggests that it can sell something back to you that's a more perfect version of what it had before. And when you think about Monsanto and all of these, you know, biochemical, you know, products that the whole the whole way that they talk about them is that they're better, they're more, they're cleaner, they're more able to help people, and it's such an illusion. And that's about the fact that we're addicted to this idea of needing to create perfection around us, when in nature things aren't perfect.
Yeah, we can't be natural anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We've perverted
mm-hmm.
nature,
yes.
And we only perverted nature because why? Because we don't know how to be natural anymore. Everything
because
without
we don't know how to accept our imperfections. We don't know how to accept the different stages in our life, accept the
natural.
Suffering
yes,
with
exactly.
the good. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I really appreciate the depth of your analysis. I think it's wonderful. And I think it's honestly missing in metaphysical community to a certain extent. I've, you know, done this radio show and work with clients the way that I do, specifically because when I went in larger circles, to a certain extent, some of what I was getting wasn't mirrored back to me, wasn't what my value was about what
yeah.
the work is about. And that was about being natural, allowing yourself to feel things that are painful. You know, there's a tendency, a lot of people just want to push away from something that's painful. It doesn't mean you have to stay in that place and, you know, just boo-hoo yourself to death. But you have to honor the fact that your body cycles and that your emotional experiences cycle. And part of that is accepting the fact that you're going to have times when you don't feel 24/7, you know, on fire, and times when you do, and it's about allowing yourself to be in all of those different places. And I think that what you're talking about in terms of this whole idea of, you know, not being natural and not being perfect and all of this is the same kind of an idea. It stems from
oh,
the
yeah.
same place, a lack of
I have a
mm-hmm.
whole chapter in my book about this. It's like how love isn't the opposite of fear. You know, like we've
mm-hmm.
created all these concepts which are dualities,
yeah.
and when we create
yeah.
a duality, you create fear. So we actually
yeah.
have a fear of fear, and
mm-hmm.
and we can't access our emotions anymore, and then they get
yeah.
suppressed, and all these people get all these symptoms now. And what happens is when you shut a symptom down, it floats around in your energy field.
Right.
And because of the law of attraction, you're right about, I have a whole chapter on law of attraction in my book. It's a law of love. Whatever
mm-hmm.
you run away from and don't love, you're going to attract it back. It's
right.
going to float around in your energy field until you attract it back. So primarily the law of attraction is a law of love. You know, it works, you know, whatever you're pushing away, you attract, but whatever you love, you attract. And then people start attracting in polarities. If they
yeah.
live their life
oh,
in
wow.
polarity, they will attract
yeah.
in polarities. But if you live
mm-hmm.
your life in truth and just be in the one, you won't worry about the back and the forth and the polarity. You will just be in the present moment and
mm-hmm.
have a connection with the divine. And even
mm-hmm.
Jesus was persecuted. Even
right.
Buddha had assassination attempts against him. And they've thwarted the law of attraction, so there's theories going around where they say, oh, Jesus never really was persecuted because that wouldn't fit theories of the law of attraction. Jesus allowed his persecution to show us how to stand up to
yeah.
the governments, to the systems,
absolutely.
How not to be afraid, to not,
absolutely.
You know, he could have run away, you know, he could have manifested something else, but then he wanted us to follow his example. And he
exactly.
wasn't all love and light and all that other. I mean, he was, but you know what I mean? He challenged
yeah.
things, you know?
Well, and he was human, too. I mean, that's what I always watch
exactly.
Jesus Christ Superstar every year at Easter, because to me, the thing that's the most interesting part of the Jesus story isn't his divinity, it's his humanity. It's how he struggled to accept what was his fate, the role that he needed to play to be a mirror for all of humanity. And that's a really intriguing story to me, much more intriguing than the idea that he was divine, which we all are, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And we don't have to force him to be overly human either, you know, we
yeah.
don't have to force ourselves to be overly human. But there's a
yeah.
balance where, you know, we can achieve enlightenment without running away from everything, without splitting. It's just through awareness and relays. And what I've learned is it's to treat life as a dream, one that you can wake up in the dream and you can become lucid. And that doesn't mean we have to go around. Once you become lucid, you know, I've studied Osho and all that stuff, you don't need to run around and manifest a whole bunch of stuff because you know who you are. We only need to do that when we don't feel good enough, when we don't have enough.
We're in a place of neurosis. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. That's awesome. I always think about it in terms of the archetype of, you know, when you think about messianic tradition, when you think about Jesus or Buddha or people like that who are very, very revered, they're also often very persecuted. And I think about it in terms of the archetype of the scapegoat who always comes back as the healer because if they don't, or not the healer, the redeemer, because if they don't care about the story that's being told by the community about them, right, if they really, really understand this idea that what people think about them is not their business, then they don't care. They do their work. They understand what they're here to do, and they don't care about the other piece, you know. So they earn respect from other people by the fact that they know who they are inside, like what you're saying.
And you know, Jesus plopped himself right in the middle of, you know, a lot of resistance.
Yeah.
So, and that's, you know, that's what my book is about. And even, like, there's a little fear in there, if anyone else wants to go out and buy my book, that people are going to read it and, you know, that have that energy. Because I do challenge society, and that's scary because people are really stuck. You know, we have to do it this way, and like you said, we have to be nice and da-da-da-da. And, you know, in Jesus, you know, he was a nice guy, but he said things that challenged how people have been brought up in the traditions of Moses, you know, and you had to be circumcised and all this stuff. And he got persecuted because he actually healed a couple people on a Sabbath, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no rules, really. There's only learning. And even in my book, you know, I'm laying out a lot of knowledge and rules or whatever, things passed down to me, but still it's a choice. And that's the main thing they told me, because I was confused at first when I started getting the messages. I was like, but, you know, we're supposed to be love and focus on light and all that other stuff. And the message was, but you still have a choice of what we create here. So we can either create a nightmare together, and it'll be all our own thoughts that did that. The thoughts that are beneath the thoughts, the thoughts that are beneath the actions, the thoughts that are beneath the inaction, the thoughts beneath the uncaring, the thoughts beneath the worship of the lifeless, and why? But we don't see all those thoughts. We're only focused on the superficial ones that society tells us to focus on. Let's say, you know, and all the gurus out there. And I love David Hawkins because he says he says a lot of this stuff in his book too, and I didn't even know it. And I read his book after I'd written mine. But, you know, and he says he's calibrated a lot of books because he does this.
Is that the book, Power versus Force?
Yeah, Power versus Force.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
And, and he calibrated all these guru books out there, and they actually were very low. And I can see that because it keeps you striving and chasing and wanting and obsessing and focused on outcomes and all this stuff. And then the message my guides were giving was like, whoa, you know, back off there, you know. You're bringing things way out of balance here, and then we're messing with energy and talking about vibration, and people are going into people's energy field and doing all these things and going into the planet and doing all these things to speed up vibration.
Yeah.
And what does that do? It makes us feel sped up.
Well, and the idea is that anything calibrates at a certain level and that's fixed. It's just, to me, that's poppycock. I mean, if you pick up something and you bring your energy to the experience, your thoughts, your biochemistry, you're going to change the way that it responds, you know, that the way it's calibrated. So, like, to me, to even say this is calibrated in this manner and this is the calibration that it has disempowers people from the get-go because it disallows them to have their own experience with whatever they're taking in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, like, you know, there are gouges and things. We are speeding up, you know, like, there's certain things that you can. I think you're going to David Hawkins and what I'm trying to forget the point that I was trying to make. But, yeah, we're messing with energy in certain ways, and we're thinking we know what energy is and how to work with it, and we're projecting a lot of our beliefs, and we're not realizing how entrapped it is into the collective consciousness. And what my guide said is focus on the state you want to achieve rather than an external, because when we try to play with energy, we're trying to affect something externally. And so instead of asking for higher vibration, and you know, when you do that, you can mess up all your chakras. You know, higher vibration and all these other things. Ask for love. Ask for peace.
Right.
Ask for
right.
hope. You know, ask for the, you know, even with money, ask for security instead of money.
Yeah.
And then you're healing the void from the inside so that you can manifest outwardly instead of trying to force your will and energy into the world, you know, trying to control externals.
Yeah, definitely. I think we're kind of saying the same thing. I think it's the same when you... When you think that anything has a fixed calibration, like, you know, it just is only this, you know, then you're in that place where you're defining that it only is this or it is everything, you know, so that you want that balance, you want that interplay between the energies so that you trust your own experience and trust your own inner knowing and your own inner truth.
Yeah, and I don't know, I think David, when he was doing it for himself, that's, you know, according to his energy, what the calibration was for him. So, you know, but his calibration matched what mine is for me and how I perceive the world as well, which it's all like, it's all a dream. But, you know, but...
Right. Well, what else do you want to share about your book? It sounds like it sounds wonderful. I will probably be reading it myself.
Well, I also wanted to give a free copy away if, like, to anyone, anyone who wants to call in. You know, I'll give one free copy away to. I don't know. I guess I'll can put some names in a hat if anyone wants to call in. But yeah,
okay.
I'll give out a free copy, and
awesome.
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon, and it's called I Am the Lotus, Not the Muddy Pond. And it's available on Kindle and paperback.
Very cool. Well, I'm putting that out into the chat room right now that anybody who calls in, which means that you just have to light up your little microphone there and say that you're there, and we will give you a copy of this book. So,
I just want to give out one copy, but, you know, keep the names, and then,
Right,
then,
right. We'll put you in the hat for the copy of the book. So anybody who wants to do that, feel free to call in now, and we'll get you on and get your contact information and make sure that we know how to reach you in case you do win that. So absolutely. So what else did you want to share about the book and about your journey writing it and that sort of thing? It sounds like you had a really unique journey writing it and that you were very, very guided. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I was so guided, and there was a lot of psychics who came to me, and I wasn't, you see, I was even struggling myself, and in the beginning of writing it, and I was like, you know, I should just not write anything that's, you know, it just gets into the whole thing again or whatever, and then, you know, I had to really be convinced, you know, this message has to be out, and then, you know, a few psychics, there's a few psychics around me. And, you know, one kept saying, you know, you've been coming to me in meditations offering me lotus flowers. And I was like, and you're supposed to write this book. Your guides really want you to write this book. And I was like, you know, so there's been a lot of people who told me, you know, you have to write this book. And they didn't even know what the book is about. They still don't know what the book is about. They haven't read it. But, you know, so I had a lot of encouragement because I was originally, you know, if this message is just supposed to be out, it'll be out and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, again, I was asked to write it, and I kept the price as low as Amazon would let me make it. So, you know, to produce it, and I'm trying to be as eco-friendly and responsible as possible. And it is available for free on my site as well. But I realize some people want a copy. So, or to give it to someone else, but, you know, so it's, you know, I just created it, and it started out just wanting to focus on actually Buddha. It started out kind of wanting to focus on the simplicity and his message of a middle way, and then after the first chapter, I didn't even know what the split was, and then just writing the first chapter, all this stuff came out about the split, and the whole book changed into being about this split that, you know, we've kind of split ourselves and kind of, and when my friend came to me with the, you know, you came to me bearing lotus flowers, I was like, okay, I got to look that up. What does that mean? And it was all about, that came across this quote that was about the lotus in the pond. And the pond represents the collective consciousness. And the lotus represents the self. And I said, oh, there's my title. Because
awesome.
And that's what the book became about. It's how to find yourself swimming through this collective consciousness, how to ask the collective consciousness questions, how to see it, how to release it, you know, in order so that we can kind of find ourselves more clearly. Again, it's not a thing of force, and I mentioned that in my book. It's just an awakening process. And
mm-hmm.
you know, one of the guides that I do follow is Eckhart Tolle. So
mm-hmm.
he's probably the closest to my message. So
that's awesome. That's so cool. I think it's amazing how when you get into that creative energy, how you have so many synchronicities along your path and how everything just opens up to you so that you, you know, are given this kind of guidance and these symbols and this whole magic creates itself. Such a wonderful
journey.
Yeah, because
sometimes you see things and you don't put them into words. And then when you put them into words, it's like, holy cow,
mm-hmm,
you know,
because
it's like it takes on a whole different meaning. And so, again, that shows the importance of words and everything. But, you know, just there's things that I always seen. And even as my work as a healer, it would be like I would try to heal people. And I would get very uncomfortable because there was a very rushed feeling. You know, they wanted to be healed in 5 seconds. And then they wanted to go back into what made them sick again. You know, they wanted
mm-hmm.
to, you know, heal so that they could stay up all night and study, you know, for an exam. And something in me just was like, you know, something about this isn't right. But I couldn't put my finger on it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then it started, because I was part of the whole, and I've burnt out and everything, as part of the whole societal belief that we have to strive. You know, we have to do this and we have to be, like you said, perfect, or we have to try. And then you just start realizing it's all a bunch of ladders and we're all trying to like squash the other person below us to get to a higher rung.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it really is not kind. It's not kind to ourselves. It's not kind to other people. And there's ways we can get around doing all of this stuff, but we just don't know because we're so conditioned to learn to survive in a money system and in certain ways. But another thing that came through the book was the idea of an intentional community. And I didn't really know what these communities were until someone, I think me and, you know, Belle Salisbury, so we were having visions
mm-hmm.
of the future with these communities, with these domes. And people were sharing things and all that stuff. So I started looking it up. And these communities have already started. And they're called
mm-hmm.
intentional communities. And then if you go to bellesprit.com, which is an online spiritual magazine, there's an article, and it's about it's Nick Stern, Sun Warrior on a rainbow mission. And this is one of the people who is trying to start his own intentional community. So, and it's going to be in Hawaii, and I recommend everyone out there who, if you want to know what these communities are and you actually want to be able to fathom a different way to live so that we can get out of these structures that we feel so controlled by and we're just like adhering to without question, you can read that article. And like you said, synchronicity, I just happened to have a friend and she's like, oh, that sounds like what my boss is trying to make. And I'm like, what? You know someone?
Wow.
And it's That's her awesome boss trying to start this this company. So not this company, this community. So, you know, the ideas are out there. It's just, you know, and what he said is amazing. He said, you know, there's a lot of people thinking out there, but there's no action. Like
yeah,
everyone's sitting
absolutely.
Around waiting for, he says,
somebody
I want to be one of the people who act.
Yeah,
we have
absolutely.
All these movies like the Venus Project and everything else, but they're all dreams because, you know, you need the money first to do the da-da-da-da. But with the intentional community and going off-grid and stuff, it's just learning how to do that. And
right.
you actually save money and things like that. So, you know, but people don't know how to do all this stuff, so...
Well, you
yeah.
also learn how to make the resources work for you so that you, I mean, there's several intentional communities, I think, in Kentucky, and there's ways to learn how to work communally so that all your needs are met and you're not living in such a selfish way. You're not living where you need so much each individual person. We watched some documentaries about intentional communities in, I think, Sweden and Switzerland and things like that, and they all make meals together, and one person will make the meal for a whole group of people. They'll do childcare together. So it's a way of breaking down resources so that not as much is needed by each individual, you know?
Yeah, and you're gonna ultimately be happier in that kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Because right now we're
so isolated.
We all have to strive for ourselves. You know, if anything happens, you know, even if there's a disaster or something, you know, who do we turn to? But you know, with these intentional communities, you are already sharing. You're already in a form of a tribe. So you're going to move together, go together, you know, live together and all these other things. And you're going to be able to work the land if anything happens. And I really, that was one of the things that came to me is, you know, Earth is about to take a turn. And this isn't meant to frighten anyone. It's just, you know, we could learn another way. There's still time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really about fear of loss. And we have such a tremendous fear of loss overpowering the planet right now. We want more and more and more and more. That we're creating loss. And so what might start to happen is a lot of us might start losing things, you know, through disasters or other things. We might start losing homes. We might start losing, you know. And so if we can supplement that fear of loss with learning how to grow our own food, learning how to be interdependent rather than dependent. Right now we're so dependent that if anything happens, we're lost. We don't know how to fend for ourselves. So, you know,
absolutely.
The more we can do, to, you know, join with your neighbor, you know, get to know people, bond together, learn to grow your own food. You know, I have a horrible black thumb, but I'm trying. But, you know, be prepared, you know, and do it in a way where you can join with others. And it's not like a fear-based thing, but it's a proactive-based thing. And it's, you know, I want to do this because I want to be an expression of love, of unity, of peace, and of everything else. Not because I'm perfect, because we as humans can band together and learn to aspire to these things while incorporating, as you said, you know, the negatives and our fear and everything else. We can join. It's just when we split, we're all over the place, and we're all fending for ourselves, and we're all blaming because we don't realize we're all so.
And we're creating illusions in our mind about each other and labeling each other and not really sitting down and talking to each other, you know, turning on the TV and listening to what the media says about this group or that group instead of, like, you know, going out and being engaged and finding out who we really are and what we really think, you know, instead of what the media is telling us to think about things, which is all fear-based, you know.
Yeah, and it's not just the news either. It's a television program which tells you you have to find love in this way, and you have to. It has to be in. You know, so many people are swept up by unrequited love because what's the main topic of movies? The unrequited relationship that turns into a romance. Sorry, people, that really does not happen a lot.
Right, and if it does happen for very long, it doesn't stay in that, like, romance stage. It grows and it morphs and it changes and it's work. But that's not what people tell you. They tell you that if you're with the right and perfect person, you'll never argue about anything. I mean, that's an illusion, too. We have so many illusions that are propagated by the media and by, you know, reality TV. And I agree.
They're just as entrenched in everything as we are, and a lot of people want to blame the government for stuff, but the government is just a higher representation of what we're doing. They're just doing what we're doing on a bigger level, and they're as stuck as we are. I mean, we could go out and we could change how we live and all that stuff, but no, we want to wait for the government to do it. But what's the government doing? The government's doing the same thing. They can't change. They got this company relying on
them. If they actually did everything
we wanted them to, they would get backlash because, oh no, now you're going to make the industry suffer. You know, they can't win. The government can't win. They literally are stuck right now. I feel sorry for the government.
Right.
They're blamed for everything.
For both sides,
and
they're blaming each other instead of communicating themselves, you know.
Well, even not just the forms of government are blaming each other, but the people, the public is blaming.
Absolutely.
You know,
the government and vice versa.
And the government, really, if you think about it, they can't do nothing. I mean, they're running out of money, too. So,
right.
they, you know, they make one step towards being more ecologically friendly, some other Joe Blow is going to come in. Even the eco-friendly people are going to come in,
right,
and go,
exactly,
I need to earn a living. You know, you can't,
exactly,
take away jobs. So, you know,
right,
you really can't win.
Right. No, yeah, it's true. And everybody's pointing the finger at someone else. It's totally true. Well, I want to say that one person has expressed interest in this wonderful book that Mandy's written, and I've gotten their contact information. So if there's anyone else out there who is interested in this book, it is up for grabs, and I'm sure it's a great read for the next 15 minutes. So put your information in the hat, and the proverbial hat, and I will pull it from something, you know, and determine who gets that. So I just want to put that out there as well. But that's going on.
No problem.
Yeah, absolutely. So, wow, well, we've covered a lot of territory. We've talked about a lot of stuff. And I think that this stuff is so, so important to talk about because I don't think it gets talked about this way on these shows, you know. And I think that we saw it in the beginning of the year. There was I interviewed a guy who's working on a group called Collective Evolution that's made a wonderful, wonderful video on YouTube, which if anybody gets a chance to watch it, just put it in. It's called Collective Evolution. And it's all about this embracing our own inner knowing and working to, you know, collectively unite with each other and to communicate. And it pulls in this whole, all these facets of spirituality along with some forms of political activism. And I think that we're seeing that in a lot of different arenas. I think we're.
Yeah, and it's illusion that our angels don't want that for us.
Like,
you know,
that,
like they don't want us to sit around being, you know, codependent and needy and all these other things. I mean, they're telling us to love for a reason.
Right.
You know, they're not going to judge us though, but they're trying to get us to see things. But because, you know, we've been conditioned to view love in a certain way, we can't see what they're trying to tell us. You know what I mean? It gets lost.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're not going to say things that are going to jar us either. You know, but those people who are opening, they will say more. Like for me, I'm getting different messages from Archangel Ariel than someone else would, because I was ready for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And now more and more and more, I've seen like over the last 2 years, more people are ready for this message. More people
absolutely
welcome it.
I'm
seeing people post things on Facebook, you know, so, you know, it is getting out there, but, you know, we are meant to be free.
Yeah.
We're meant to be, and it's okay if we act a little toward that, you know?
I think that great shift, that there is this great shift that's starting to happen, that's more collectively evolving and more focused on collective consciousness, which is this blending of the idea that to be a spiritual person is to be an activist and is to look for truth and is to look for better ways to do things. It isn't to just sit there and, get a lot of consumer goods by your manifestation. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because so what does the Rainbow Warrior prophecy says? It says it's a spiritual person who can put their words into actions.
Yeah.
So, it's a really wonderful concept. And you know, we've had a lot of people who, you know, have written about Rainbow Warriors and all this stuff, and they've totally missed the action, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It says, when the earth is dying, there shall arise a new tribe of color and creeds. This tribe shall be called the Warrior of the Rainbows, and it shall put its faith in action, not words. So you
absolutely
make love, instead of talking about love and light and unity, you make your path that you walk in light in life one of love and unity. And what isn't loving to the whole isn't loving to your brother. It isn't loving
mm-hmm
to yourself. Isn't loving to your mother or your children or anything else. So, and nature is starting to speak, you know, and she tends to communicate with me in song.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll
mm-hmm
hear songs. So the last one was, it's only just begun. So, yeah.
Awesome. That's wonderful. Yeah, I think, too, that one of the things that you talk about in your book, I'm sure, is how the universe course, you know, connects differently with different people, because it seems like all of your work is about getting people to trust their own inner guidance, their own inner voice, their own inner truth, and to not look outside for it first, you know. And I think that's so important, that whole piece, you know, to not just decide that,
yeah,
you know, it's just about
that's
your
one of the reasons
first chakra
I
because
did
somebody tells you it.
Yeah,
you know?
That was one of the reasons I wasn't sure about writing a book, because I was like, you know, there's so many gurus out there. We've become guru worshipers, and we don't even really know,
yes,
you know, what's truth anymore. But, you know, really it's about seeing life as a dream and decoding it in your own way. And, you know, all I've done in my book is I try not to guru any. I put my own opinion out there on how I see it. But it's really, you know, make your own symbols, make your own dream and everything else. But, you know, the fruits, you know, my main message in my book is to pay attention to the fruits. And the Bible speaks about this. Buddha speaks about this. It's however you want to interpret it, but I think it's because life is a dream. And, you know, the rotten tree cannot grow good fruit, and a good tree cannot grow rotten fruit. So we have to kind of figure out, okay, and, you know, what are the seeds that are growing these trees? And, you know, people think thoughts is just thoughts, and that our actions aren't forms of thoughts. But our actions is form of thought, our inaction is form of thought, everything is a form of thought.
Yes.
Our denial is a form of thought. Why are we denying things? Why do you want to buy what you want to buy? What thought is under that? Why do you want to sell what you want to sell? What's underneath that? What thoughts are underneath that? Not just
which
the surface thoughts.
A great big shadow, and we don't look at what that shadow is. You know, that Jungian idea of the shadow, we don't look at what that is, that can fuel. Jung talks about this whole idea that what we don't bring conscious light to is what exists in the outer world is fate, what comes to exist in the outer world is fate. And I really think that's what we're seeing in terms of some of our political systems and things like that. We're not saying, oh my gosh, you know, we're all in this together, and there's this huge, you know, this huge schism like you're talking about, and we're not getting accurate information. None of us are Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, off the grid, or, you know, that it's hard to get accurate information, and that we need to connect with each other, and we need to talk about what that looks like and what that sounds like to our ears, and, you know, all of that. And we need to own our shadow and say, this is my shadow here, and I don't want to look at this stuff because it's scary. And that's, I think, what's going on in our political systems, is nobody wants to look at their shadow. They just want to project it and point to somebody else.
Yeah,
and say,
then
oh, there's a,
a lot
bad
of
person.
Us have had past lives where we've been persecuted and stuff, too, for talking.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
this is probably one of the first points in life, and U.S. is heading to a state where they're going to try to shut people down. And again, this is just out of a consciousness, because they're afraid of riots and everything else, because that's what's starting. This movement is starting. But what my guides also wanted me to say is, not only is there a law of attraction, but there's a law of supply and demand. So the whole universe works on supply and demand, just the same as it works on attraction. So there can be nothing that exists in life, Monsanto or anything else, without a demand on it. So a demand for it. So if the way that the public has control, and you can have peaceful control too, is to just, again, it's a process for yourself of figuring out what you want to give your demand for, what you want to create a demand for. So, you know, and that's the most peaceful way we can change things for those people out there who are afraid of activism and all these other things, is to just start saying quietly in your own life, what am I giving a demand for? You know, by shoving my kid in a school system where he's focused on grades and all this stuff, what am I giving a demand for? It goes all the way to war. You know, war, if you trickle back war and conflict and everything back down, it all goes back to how we were raised as children, what schooling we had and everything, what message we were given. And,
absolutely.
You know, everything goes back to, like, if it's causing conflict, if it's causing competition, if it's causing, you know, this trapped feeling where you never feel good enough, keep trickling back to what you're creating a demand for. How are you creating a demand for war in the world? How are you creating a demand for environmental destruction? How are you creating, because everything that is around us, we've all created together. We're all responsible for it. So And we can control everything through what we're demanding. And that demand can be putting our voice out into the world and speaking, can be making little changes in our own lives, and it can be acting on things. So, you know, sometimes there's going to have to be anger. You know,
it's just, as we act on things, there's less shadow. You know, when we act, when we say, okay, I'm going to recycle all of this stuff, or I'm going to give this stuff away that I don't really need to people who don't have it, when we start to live those loving actions in our life, our shadow gets smaller, you know, because we're not looking, we're not hiding from it anymore. We're not hiding from the fact that it makes us feel bad to have, you know, closets and closets of clothes we don't wear, or whatever it is, you know, whatever.
Well,
the
there are people who... There are people who are acting and they're strictly revolutionary minded and they just want to turn everything over. But the danger of that is they're just going to turn everything over. It's going to leave a void. They're going to put something else in and it's going to swoop up all the old energies. It's going to swoop up all the, you know, it's just going to put a different regime in place to, you know, like we've done it before. We've had revolutions before in this world. So, you know, like you said, it has to be internal and it has to be on what you can do in your life and be an action that's conscious rather than an action that's unconscious. So, you know, you're creating your dream of life and you really know what you're creating. Half of us are creating all this stuff and we don't even know why.
Yes.
So start asking
Absolutely.
Why.
Absolutely.
Why do you even want money? Who told you to want money?
Who told you it was a better resource than connecting and manifesting things in other ways?
Yeah, exactly.
Who told you it was more worthwhile than sitting on your back porch and feeling a sense of peace? And yeah, absolutely.
And we're
absolutely.
Afraid of simplicity because we're afraid of death. We actually think if we're simple in life, we're
going
to be ostracized.
We could have a whole hour-long conversation about that. But we do only have 3 more minutes. So I want to make sure people know where to get your book, the name of your book, and then I'm going to announce who won the book. So real quick, where can they do that?
Well, you can get it at Amazon. You can get it at Amazon Kindle. You can get it in CreateSpace. And you can view it on my site for free. It's mysticmandy.com. It's the tab I Am the Lotus. And I'm even finding a way to upload it to YouTube. So
awesome.
Yeah, so you can do that. And I'm using the money, any kind of money I gain from this book is going to put into this little fund where I can try to be part of starting my own intentional community with others.
That's
my goal.
That's wonderful. Well, great. Well, thanks so much for being our guest tonight. The book will go out to Ellen Ryan. So, Ellen, I hope that you enjoy that. And thanks so much for being on Inner Voice tonight, Mandy. And thanks for your insight and your wisdom and everything. Thanks for the conversation.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Have a great evening.
Night.
Night. Let's see. Okay. I'm trying to find the music here. Ah, here we go. This is Dar Williams, The Blessings, and this is a song all about synchronicity and all about noticing the deeper resources that we have in our life and the divine wisdom that we have. So this will carry us out this evening. If you are interested in finding out all about your own divine wisdom, looking for tools to develop your own creativity and your own intuition, check out innervoiceintuitive.com and connect with your like-minded friends who are doing the same thing. Whatever you do between now and next week, go and make magic, feel magic, create magic, inspire magic, notice magic, share it with others. That's what we're here for. Have a great evening and share your shiny pretty picture with Inner Voice so that you can follow the show. Take care, everybody. I know.